Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Really, 007.
We are in Baku, and we get a lovely David Arnold score, don't we? And we get a gorgeous shot of the BMW, slightly modified from the ones, of course, in... Well, it was more of a family saloon, wasn't it, in Tomorrow Never Dies. But here we're back to the sort of sports car. Don't know how he got it there.
Tomorrow Never Dies, it was the ideal choice for a weekend away to a local travelodge.
It was. Avis rent a car. It was all very realistic.
Very Avis, yeah. Yeah.
But this one's gorgeous, and the David Arnold score, how it has those little... Well, not quite Arabic, because it's you're in that area, aren't you? With the like little echoed Spanish guitars, those type of things. And then it goes into the Bond theme, and it's just superb.
Little, gorgeous.
Yeah, little plants as well, Matt. I know you like your plants in terms of the script. You get a little shot of the tree-cutting helicopters.
Oh, yeah.
And Bond's like, ooh, what are they?
Yeah, it's crucial that you see them, because otherwise... otherwise, when they come up later, you'll be a bit like, oh, that's a bit... It's a bit odd, you know, I might... not question it, but the fact that you've seen them already, you know, it marries it up, so you're like, ah, yeah, I remember.
Because they're quite weird things, aren't they?
Yeah, it felt like, as soon as I saw that shot of them chopping, and then they do a close-up of the chopping, I was like, well, that's going to be coming back later.
Exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Don't get much more sort of Bond device that he needs to escape from than the great big chopper thing.
it's quite inventive, though, isn't it? You know, I love that when they think of something that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
Just look and go, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. But I should add, though, that it wasn't with a chagrin that I was like, oh, that'll come back. It was like, oh, I hope they come back.
Yeah.
I want to be seeing some of that.
Yeah.
Just didn't know it would be involving a scene with Robbie Coltrane.
Oh, the slowest running away from... we'll get to that. Yeah. Hang on. But I do like how they're of practical use, aren't they, to cut trees, and of course they're going to be for the sinister motive as well later on, which is very crisp.
I
think that their success rate is not high.
It's very poor, isn't it?
Quality.
Very poor.
There are better things you could use, but you know.
Did you know that the exteriors of the oil refinery control centre were shot at the Motorola building in Swindon? I really had to say that.
I've seen them before.
Yeah. A little flavour of James Bond.
Swindon.
Swindon lot.
Slugs.
John off, we get David off at this stage. Quite an interesting character.
Bless him.
Played by... I can't even remember now. I'm not even sure I've written it down. He was that insignificant. I'm so sorry.
He had a trading card for himself, though, didn't he? Or a poster, at least a character poster.
Yeah. He would do it these days, wouldn't he? Well, anyone would.
I mean,
if Elvis got one.
Yeah.
Oh, don't. Oh. If Elvis got one, my cousin should have one.
Yes, she should.
Yeah.
So Davidoff is the chief of security. Yeah, actually, this is hilarious. I haven't written down the actor's name, but I've written down what he's in. He's Danish. That's all I've put down. His film debut was the film Night Watch. No, not the Brosnan. Sadly, not the Brosnan film. he also played, this is very John, I'm sure, Dr. Hans Shoegarten in Mike Bassett's English Manager.
Ulrich Thompson.
That's it, Rob.
Brilliant.
Classic Danish name, yeah. It is. Tom Sen.
Yeah. Tom Sen.
Omi Djalili as well just gets a casual cameo, doesn't he? He was in these things in 1999. He was in this and The Phantom Menace, wasn't he? Just casually.
Mummy as well.
Yeah.
Oh, The Mummy, yeah, of course. Yeah. Late 90s.
And then Gladiator the year later.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, what is this about?
It's a good little run.
Yeah.
For a British Iranian
retired
comedian.
Retired from film. I can't do any more.
Yeah. Quit while you're ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost akin to Jim Carrey's run in, you know, 94 and 95.
Yeah.
Two great 90s comic runs.
Yeah.
Carrey and Jolili.
One's an actor who does comedy roles, the other's a comedian who does very serious, you know, dialogue roles. Not a hint of comedy in this. Bit of exposition, I can't remember, but it's quite a crisp.
There's a bit of comedy later.
Well, there is, yeah. But finally now, we get the entrance of the pretty much the main character apart from Bond in the film, Elektra. Almost like a Michael Jackson entrance in the helicopter. You know, there's an absolute furore, isn't there? Of, wow, she's here and everybody's like surrounding her, queuing up for autographs. We get... I'm sure. Does that not enter your head? I would have thought.
Yeah, it's just announcing a 15 night run at a Baku casino.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. This is it. Final curtain call. Sorry. Yes, but it's quite another good way to introduce him. I know we saw her before at the funeral, and Colin Salmon didn't really know who she was, but I think everybody in her. One of her home countries knows who she is. And we also just briefly see Gabor, one of the not-quite-henchmen who didn't really make much of an impression in our forthcoming henchman episode. But see, he's got a lovely hair, hasn't he?
I think he's a really good-looking presence, actually. I think he cinematically, he looks the part, doesn't he?
Being a bit of a 90s fanboy, I was buzzing when Gabor turned up. Because I knew him as Vulcan from Gladiators.
Oh, yes!
Yeah.
Oh, really? Wow, I didn't know that.
So,
that's where you recognised him from.
And basically, Vulcan at the time, Gladiators was just jumping the shark, and they brought Vulcan in to be the Wolfman's, like, bad boy number two.
Oh,
and so when he turned up in The World Is Not Enough, I'm just like, this is brilliant, you know?
One of
the things I have with this film is that whilst we've got a really serious thing going on with Sophie Marceau and all the rest of it, some of the casting of some of the smaller roles is just so absurd. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it's basically like we'll just pick who's in OK Magazine of pop culture and we'll just put them in, and yet it works so well. And, I love it. I'm going to defend it to the hills. Gabor is useless. Like Davidoff, would I change them? Not for a second.
I love how embedded the phrase Davidoff is in pop culture, that you immediately think of, you know, perhaps, you know, like Adonis is emerging from the sea in a fragrance advert, and nothing matches up with what we're...
Surely we should be thinking about Sawyer from Lost, you know, Clearwater
exactly,
by Davidoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. What on earth are you doing with this guy?
Chicago town. While we're just on that sort of lilt, can I just slightly segue to a little story? I was at a book festival and I was introduced to an author, and I, you know, shook hands, very nice guy, very tall, but quite, you know, like gentle-hearted, lovely to chat to. And I was like, where the heck do I know this guy from? And it was the Gladiator Trojan. Oh. I was introduced to him as Mark, but Trojan now writes crime books.
Brilliant.
Oh, my brilliant.
Word. Yeah, seriously.
Stunning man as well.
Well, Chicago town deep dish.
Was it him? I think it was Trojan when they made a live action Action Man series. Or they tried to.
Oh, yeah.
It was Trojan who was cast.
Was it?
Yeah, I've never seen any footage of it, but I just remember that.
I only found out he was Trojan after I'd spoke to Mark for 15 minutes. So, but looking at him, like, I do know you. I just don't know where. And you don't want to go, like, where? Come on, mate. Where is it? How do we know each other? You know, like that kind of thing.
This is outstanding.
But yeah, yeah. So
I
sorry.
He might have been married. I think he might have been married to Ulrika Johnson at one point. Better fact check these things, haven't we, really? someone Google that now. No. So yes, we're in this sort of gorgeous cave type area, and there's like a church with a crisp priest or something. I can't remember what math. Can you? Do you
so,
know?
Yeah. So I think the idea is that the pipeline is supposed to be going. If it was to go in like a straight line, be constructed in a straight line, they'd have to knock the church down. But because Electra is a person of the people. You know, she cares for the culture, she cares for the history, and therefore she says, even though it will cost millions, build it around it rather than knocking the church down. And it gives a bit of characterization to her.
I didn't get that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what this was about.
I that's what I understood it to.
Yeah,
be.
Yeah. John, yeah. You must know.
I mean,
I picked up on that. Love it. It's all good. Another string to Electra's bow.
Yeah. At this stage.
Could have done this on the phone, surely.
Yeah. She wanted to be with her people.
Yeah. My pipeline. My people.
My pipeline.
My legacy.
We get the first Bond, James Bond. I don't know whether, I can't remember whether it was pronounced like that, but that's just Brosnan saying Bond, James Bond.
It is the first one, isn't it? Because he does it a couple of times in this, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Because there's the awkward one a little bit later.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the biggest gap between any.
James Bond.
Yeah.
It's American.
If it was one of us, like, you know, it's Rob. Oh, dear, it's massive noise. Parker.
Yeah.
Parker. I'm so apologetic. We were talking just before, after we had our little break, I was talking to John about, you know, being, John openly says he's a Twine apologist. And I think after watching it again, I think I am as well. I can't really, yes. I don't really have much bad I want to talk about here, because this is possibly the last time that I saw a Bond that I recognised being James Bond. And I think there's really load of Bond moments in this film. So I'm very forgiving of quite a bit here now.
Yes, Rob.
He's full of swagger.
He is. Oh, he is.
Well, speaking of which, the way that he grabbed those skis and sticks them, he's looking gorgeous, Bond, in his like greyish suit, as he looks gorgeous throughout his life. But the way he cockily grabs those skis and like puts them on his shoulder is so.
Yeah.
The guy's got such a cool.
He's a legend.
Isn't he? Yeah. Oh, he really is.
He's awesome.
Gravitas.
Now check your pipeline.
Ooh. Yeah.
He didn't say that. We have this conversation between the two of them then, and they get to know each other. Did anyone find it was slightly distracting how there was a massive crowd, it was really loud outside, and then suddenly for the conversation, the sound of the crowd behind us completely went down, and it was just like, yeah.
But they're all still waving their arms and shouting.
Yeah, like this. Yeah. But that happens in film. It's fine.
Magic of cinema. Yeah. Magic of cinema.
Just going on that point about that dialogue, there's a deleted scene about them driving through the pipeline, and they talk about this. They talk about go deeper into the history of the pipeline. And, I mean, it rings out some really strong political references. It talks about Hitler. It goes into, like, old historical figures. It's really, like, Apted says on the deleted scenes he took it out just for the pacing issue. But some of the actual dialogue is by far some of Purvis and Wade's most cultured stuff. I mean,
they were robbed.
They were robbed, that's it. let's continue to go to the next bit, which obviously is the ski scene, which is just an assortment of Purvis and Wade one-liners about it, isn't it, after that?
Before that, there's a few little lines I've written down in the conversation they're having between Bond and Elektra. Have you ever lost a loved one? So is that a hint at, you know, that Bond has lost his wife? Did you get that?
Or is it a hint that he lost Della from...
Yeah. It's a fair point.
Yeah. Where's my wife?
Oh. Where's my
It's really not funny. So
the man is dying, you know.
Did you like the little map as well? A bit like it's a bit like Orlov's map, isn't it, in Octopussy, of bad countries and sort of these are places we need to avoid. The terrorist area. We can't go to the terrorist countries.
I mean, we're not at the worst part of exposition in this film, but there is some great sort of, you know, like, this is what's happening dialogue going on here. I'd have loved to have heard some of that political stuff, though.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Rob, it's really on your Blu-ray. It's on your Blu-ray.
Is it?
So... If you go on the additional bits or the special features, all the deleted scenes are on there.
Is it? Because I have to be honest, I find it quite hard to navigate the recent Blu-rays because of things like initiate mission, search mission, and mission objectives and stuff like that. I don't know what any of that. What are these?
Too much of a good thing.
I just want to stay in my living room. Tell me how I can look at John Glenn talking about vampires in John Barrett's list. That's what
Oh my word. We haven't really talked about Sophie Marceau herself, the actress. Did you know she was a classically trained cellist? What? Strings to Marceau's bow, quite literally. Just when you know,
very good.
What a woman, and then, you know, you find out that as well. Good grief. I think Rob actually might like this one especially. John definitely will. Do you know who her partner was for 7 years?
Oh, yeah.
It was after this, I think. Go on, John.
Oh, hang on. No, I think I've got the wrong person. I was going to say Vincent Cassell, Monica Bellucci, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Right, so no, I've lost it then. Go on.
It's the classically trained French actor, Christophe Lambert.
Ah.
Yes.
So there you go.
Ian Astley lookalike.
Such in-joke material. To be honest, this was like her, apart from Braveheart, this was like her main international Hollywood film, wasn't it? She mainly does French European cinema, and really only became properly well known in the 30s. So there's like loads of stuff she did in the 20s knocking about there, more arty fare, obviously, because it's French, it must be. And she's not really she's done the odd film since, but not an awful lot.
Not enough.
Her last credit was 2015, so I don't know whether she's lost interest or not.
Shame.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that at all. I thought she bought... Elektra is one of the more ambitious Bond women roles that there has been in the entire franchise.
Absolutely.
Particularly in terms of the... the Stockholm Syndrome stuff is very, very ambitious. But I think Marceau does it with ease, to be honest. I think she's fabulous. Yeah. No, I buy everything she says and does about this. The duplicity, the serpentine nature of her character, the way she can turn on a sixpence and manipulate men in the way that she does. I buy every bit of it. But I also think she brings out the best in Brosnan in these.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've got a very difficult thing to do to actually buy into a man, into Bond, falling for a woman. Because Bond very rarely falls for women. He throughout the series, there's not many that you think he's actually got deep loving feelings for. And it takes a lot to actually buy into that. And then the twist comes and it not ruin the film. It actually enhanced the film.
Yeah.
And I think it's great script writing.
No.
I can't believe
it's
I just good. Said
it's
that.
It's really
I
good.
Think it is. I think it's...
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. Well done, Bruce. I think it's brilliant direction, and I think credit to Sophie Marceau because I'm gonna be honest with you. Sophie Marceau comes in at number 3 of my James Bond villains.
Oh my word!
Yeah.
There's a heck of a lot to chew out there with her, isn't there? In terms of a character,
she's believable.
It's an unusual one because we'll be going on to Christmas Jones later, and I'm not going to say my opinion yet. But it's commonly known, isn't it, that, she was miscast. Everyone says she was miscast. If you, even if you think that's true, no one really says how well cast Sophie Marceau is in this film. You don't. I don't think you hear enough of it. Because she's got to be someone, like you say, who the audience must think, wow, she's so alluring, and she really is, but also be believable when it comes to the actually, she's pretty evil, deep down, and vengeful. Yeah. And to get somebody who... Well, she's French. She's not English. She's not done that many English language films. It's a pretty big role for her, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think she her investment in this pays dividends to the film itself, because you know, it gives it its the stakes. You know, because to be honest, I haven't got a clue what the stakes in this film are.
Oh, it's far too complicated. Doesn't matter.
But all I know is that Sophie Marceau is really bad, and she wants to kill M by the end, and she also wants to screw James Bond head off. Not like that. So,
fair play to this to the writing, because she is brilliant to hear John say that she's in the top, that she's in your top three Bond villains. But in terms of just characters in Bond films, she's... she's brilliant. I mean, every scene she's in, she's almost the main thing in that scene. I remember hearing that she'd been cast, and, you know, I was quite young, and I do remember, I mean, I shouldn't have watched Braveheart, but I had watched it. obviously, that role, I think she's brilliant in Braveheart, but she, in that film, she's completely almost innocent, and she's, you know, everyone else is being awful
around her.
She's
the victim, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, yeah. I remember thinking at the time, like, wow, she's almost impossibly beautiful. I remember thinking that. But then, you know, this is a different... Because she, in this, you're right, she has that alluring... I'm struggling to say that word. Quality to her. Yeah, like, you definitely believe that even Bond would find himself falling for her. Even though there are one or two things he can't just quite put his finger on, or he can't quite, you know, work her out or feel completely at ease with her. And then, you know, the way that... you know, basically any man will almost do a bidding, and you completely believe that. And yeah, I think it's a brilliant character, and superbly cast, superbly played by Sophie Marceau.
And you need Brosnan, don't you, to be at his A game, which he is, to make her character work.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
I think also in many scenes in this, Brosnan's at his best in the franchise as well.
And I think it's his best performance, John.
100%. It's quite well known that he went to the producers and said that he wanted to get a bit more to chew on in the role. He wanted to really push through, and I think it is his best performance. It's his most emotional performance. There's a lot to love. I mean, like, we'll get onto it after. You can make video amongst video about how many times he touches his face or how many times he makes a funny noise throughout this. But he's great in it. He's superb. And he just oozes Bond in it as well. That's the other great thing about it.
He really does. Yeah, total agreement.
Even though he's falling in love with her, you don't ever think, though, he's going to be a useless agent now, and that's he's going to forget about that. He's not going to run off into the sunset like somebody else did recently in a Bond film. Anyway, carry on.
Crucially, though, in this, he spots Elektra's duplicity early on. He shows that his own metal, and you buy into his qualities and heroism because of that. And he's obviously, I mean, again, you get the impression that he's quite obviously doing this for Queen and country. You know, like, there's no other ulterior motive for him, is there? And he is doing this for the greater good, even though it means he might get a little sexy time out of it.
But yeah, might as well.
But there is that, of course, there is that scene where, you know, after they first get intimate, Elektra and Bond, where they're on the bed and they do that sort of crossfade thing of, you know, suggesting time is passing while they're in bed and talking to each other in a state of undress and real intimacy. And it adds to that idea. It's funny, John, was it you or was it you, Matt, that mentioned that Bond was in love with, or falling in love with Elektra?
Maybe that's being a bit over the, but, you know, I don't know. I think he was really enamoured with her. I don't know, yeah.
That's the better way of putting it, Matt.
Yeah,
if I said falling in love, I wouldn't go that far. I still think, personally, the only two relationships are by falling in love are Tracy and Vesper. But it's more than just something on the side. I think it's the vulnerability. I think you see beforehand when he was watching the video of her being kidnapped on the news and all that, and he's touching the screen.
Yeah.
You can tell it might be harking back to Tracy, going back to your point, Tom, about do you think that was a reference to Honor Majesty's when he says, have you ever lost someone? That whole harking back to going for the vulnerable, tragic lady, there is definitely that feeling in it there.
And that would mean that she's sort of done her homework on Bond, because she knows he's coming. She knows that he had a wife, and that's the only possible weakness you could have for him. And she wants to use it as a weakness and make herself more endearing to him so that her plan works. Because she might as well sort of seduce him so that he's thrown off, because he's effectively been sent to snuff out whoever is doing this, presuming it's Renard or someone with him. So she's got to whiff him off the scent, hasn't she? And the best way she can do that is by making herself more attractive to him. She's also got the greatest hair of anyone in the history of the world, did you say?
I did feel like at times while I was watching, like, she looks like, you know, like a sticker I got from a Bulgarian left back from a Panini album at World Cup 94.
Davidoff.
Yeah, yes. I mean, that's a little bit harsh. Yeah, it's dated.
Well,
that's dated. Yeah.
It's quite big, isn't it? But it's goodness me, it's alluring.
Sorry, just a quick one. Props to the costume designer as well. Oh, some of the dresses she wears are phenomenal.
Absolutely. Every outfit she's in is spot on. You know, and it adds to the. If it needed, it added to the character, or you know, made her more even more complete.
Yeah, yeah. And they match the scene as well, don't they?
Yeah,
like per scene they work.
That fits us neatly into the skiing scene. Her clothes for this are absolutely amazing. The hat, it's just so Bond, isn't it? Well, it's quite Tracy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very.
This is four men talking about the costume wardrobe for Sophie Master in The World Is Not Enough. I don't know about it, my favourite bit of the whole film, but this sort of minute of them skiing, the shots, the music from Arnold, which is, I think, this sort of score, this segment of it, is reused in Dying of the Day. It's like the love theme, which is reused. Yeah, I mean, that's how good it is. It had to come back. It's just everything you want, that escapism, and too many times in not just Bond films these days, it's just bang, 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 quick, 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 get on with the film, action, action, action. And I think you just need that light relief where you're just seeing them, just buying, not necessarily just talking the whole time like I'm doing now, but just them being together, just to buy the relationship.
Definitely, and then
gradually,
and obviously you're getting the stunning scenery as well, which is
good directing.
Another reason, you know, and beautifully shot, and that's cinema just as much as bang, bang, bang action scenes.
Too right.
Filmed at Chamonix, apparently, in the Alps. Yeah, they wouldn't. They're not going to go all the way to like Kazakhstan into the depths of the ski slopes there.
I did make a note that. I definitely felt. I mean, David Arnold clearly has. He's trying to hark back to Barry, which he's often successful with. And I've made a note that I definitely felt it at this point, which is obviously a plus point.
So this is sad. I was with a lady. No, this is a few quite you know many years ago. Not when it came out afterwards, but I was just at a girl's house and the TV just happened to be on. You know, when you're just chatting and it's just on in the background. It was Well It's Not Enough and was on in the background. And I suddenly lost all interest in talking to this girl. I was just like, just like looking at this gorgeous Bond and Sophie Marceau. And not sure I saw her again.
Worth it though, you know.
This scene is what reminded me how weird, not an action scene. I was like, Although now, this action scene, and again, the music goes from that, you know, glorious Barry-esque to the action music, which is very Arnold's own, isn't it, with the sort of synth. If you remember, Rob, I think you and I, maybe it's just you, had the single for The World Is Not Enough, And the B-side was this track, Ice Bandits.
It was, yeah, yeah, I remember. Yeah, just, it's a great bit of music, isn't it?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, dun, I remember dun. It being one of the rare, you know, like when you get CDs, you know, single CDs. It was always a bit of a gamble what the B-sides were going to be.
Yeah.
Because, well, I mean... No one gets this problem anymore.
Yeah, no, they don't.
Know?
No.
Like, you know, like, what would you like? Would you like a Snowdrop remix of, you know, whatever? I don't know. You know. Whereas this was great. This was something totally different. And so, yeah, I burnt this CD out. Actually, so.
Got excited for the film because, of course, you heard it before you'd seen the film as well, and you'd seen some of the shots of the skiing scene, and you're like, oh my word. Sucks.
And of course, you knew it was called Ice Bandits as well.
Yeah, which so you could
invokes its own because now that gives rise to. I mean, obviously, you can't read the track list of a soundtrack CD or soundtrack album now before you see the film. Globally, you know.
Spoiler alert.
That's yeah, I'm sure for Sixth Sense, you know, the last. Bruce is dead.
Yeah, yeah, well,
I'll put an alarm off for that bit in the edit. Can you imagine if people don't still know that?
I mean. Rob, I remember a couple of your favourite tracks that you used to play were Father's Funeral from Hellboy and Children Found from what I forgot what it's called.
Hotel Rwanda.
Hotel Rwanda.
Hotel
both of which are big spoilers.
Yeah. There's so many. but like, surely, like, you know, they're pretty on the nose as track titles.
Yeah, they really are.
In terms of a plot. Whereas, you know, Snowjob, absolutely not a clue.
Yeah.
Not a clue.
Just happens to be the best piece of action music ever created.
Ever made. Honestly, right. This past week, I've been on half term with the kids, and every time that we went anywhere, I listened to the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra's track of Snowjob, Fanfare and Wine with Stacey. Or, you know, all together. And it, by the end, you know, like, I'm singing. What am I singing by the end? No, I don't know how it's happened, actually, but I was started singing by the end because of the melody of Wine with Stacey. I'm singing, all I wanted was a sweet direction. Well, how's it happened? I don't know. So now the kids know the words to All Time High.
Somehow it gets validated, you know. It's
I don't know how it
been worked, ignored for decades now by all these even Bond fans. Brilliant. Yes. So we come into the action scene and we've got these gorgeous hovercraft type things.
Parahawks.
With the helicopters. Yeah. Again, new things you've not seen before.
Yeah.
And you're immediately intrigued into them. Yeah, so you think Bond's, I don't know, somehow managed to kill off one of them and it goes off the cliff, doesn't it? And the music changes when the parachute comes up. That's a great moment, I think. And Bond looks annoyed.
That's the bit I always remember. I don't want to be overly critical because I do like this fight, but maybe a bit the action, you know, this might be one scene where I love the scenery, I love the ideas, I love the Parahawks and what they look like, but the actual action, they're disposed of, it's almost, they're just quite clumsy. And all they're really doing, you know, even though they've got these gorgeous things, all they're doing is just firing machine guns off. I don't know, it just didn't feel maybe as exciting as it should have done. I also got that falling off the cliff, I got a bit of an OHMSS vibe. You know, see you back at the lodge. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, I'm not trying to be too critical, but I think maybe it's not quite as suspenseful and stuff as it might have been.
I actually agree with you, Math. I don't massively watch The World Is Not Enough for its action scenes. I think that's a fair point to say. I don't think it's a bad action scene. Don't get me
wrong.
Which
is character director.
Michael Apted. Yeah, I agree. I've put a note here that I think that Arnold's score carries it, and I actually think I think that that is what carries this for me. The score
and Bond.
It's really Bond, isn't it? It's Bond.
Yeah,
it's Bond.
It's very
absolutely.
Bond.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know whether you saw it. It was a hilarious shot. Bond seems to be. There's one little shot of Bond. He seems to be more interested in putting his gloves back on than Elektra. Elektra's like next to him, and he's just like ignoring her, just like.
Yeah. Putting his gloves on and then there's like an explosion and he gets distracted.
Probably just the wrong shot choice, wasn't it?
Possibly. There's that lovely bit about, you know, where they stop and they're looking, obviously. I mean, I know we've discussed this already, but like where he reminded me of, you know, his delivery of a line like, the pipeline, your father's legacy.
This is where they meet. Yeah, this is where they meet, the two ends of the pipeline.
Yeah, it's such a nice one.
Didn't need to go skiing to see it. It's just a nice little jaunt, isn't it? No,
what, why would you two check the pipeline? Yeah. What are you doing, you know?
Something just bored, stiff, rich people. Just having a nice...
Again, a phone call! Yeah. It sorts all of this.
Cinematic, you know, like, we'll just, yeah, just yeah, pipeline around it. Yeah, yeah.
Just see you later. Send Omar Jalili down there to check the pipeline, please.
In the snow, Omar Jalili skiing. We then have the amazing sort of panic scene of the Q's jumper type thing that goes into the ball. So again, it's a bit babyish that it's needed, but it's a lovely sort of use for it because of the avalanche. It's great acting, I think, from both.
Look at my eyes. Look at my eyes.
Yeah.
Look at my eyes.
It's the most I can picture. Math is obsessed with Brosnan's acting in this scene.
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
He's absolutely loving the role.
He is, yeah, and I'm loving him loving the role.
Yeah, I agree. But she's believable again.
Yeah, I do you think this is because...
Oh,
because I found her quite childlike here.
Yes.
And that's like, is that, again, it's just another facet of her multi-layered character here, that she's in high-pressure situations like this where she's not in control. She reverts to a childlike state almost.
Unless she is acting.
I was doing some acting.
Investing.
Yeah.
To sort of say properly invested.
Yeah.
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 I'd go with that.
Yeah. I don't know whether there's any wrong answer here, but yeah. I think that actually buy that more than I'd buy my own.
You think it is it's definitely.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you
time.
Do.
Oh, yeah. Stop being a child, Electra.
I think.
Naughty.
I think the acting's superb in it. My issues with it are the logistics of the coat. That's my thing.
Massive,
with it.
Isn't it?
Well, it's like, I mean, it basically pioneered Zorbin, didn't it, really? You know, that is what Zorbin's coat.
Yeah, it is.
But I don't get, like, when he rips it and then pushes it, that's the bit I don't get. Is the coat attached to him? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because then he comes out of the snow.
Does it come off him?
Like, I don't. That's my thing with it. I'm thinking far too much. I mean, you know, if I wanted to go that deep, I could tear any James Bond film apart. But it's one of those things that has always, like, I've questioned it ever since I've been a kid.
When R did it, his legs were dangling out, weren't they?
Cute.
And he was, you know, running around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
How funny would it have been to see Brosnan's legs?
You know, the helicopter's going past, like, what on earth is going on there?
But when the camera, you know, like, cuts inside the bubble, you know, they're both loose and free in there, aren't they?
Loads,
you know,
of
like,
room, yeah.
When they were, like, falling, you know, like, you imagine just both in there just smashing against each other continually. You know, and the camera cuts them and they both sat there with fractured heads from bragging.
You know, I mean, it should... I mean, let's be honest. If this outfit was in Die Another Day, Tamahori would be having a scene where they'd be making love in one of those bubbles. There's absolutely no doubt about it. You know, that would be like the end scene of him and of Bond and Jinx, definitely. Whoa.
Speaking of which, I don't know, has anyone seen the new Invisible Man film?
No, it's on Sky. I'm desperate.
All I'll say is, but basically, a lot of it is copied off the Invisible Car in Die Another Day. Right, we'll move on. I won't say any more. should the scene should then cut to M like, you nearly killed Electra with that stupid skiing trip that you went on. But no, we go to her lovely villa, don't we now?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my word.
Lovely set. And immediately you're like, of course that's where Electra would be staying or living or whatever. You know, it's absolutely
living here.
Stunning set. Stunning.
We had it in the pre-title sequence in Bilbao, but he's really touching his face now, isn't he, Brosnan? He's full steam ahead. I don't want to be safe.
You know I can't do that.
Yeah.
I like all these little exchanges. Yeah, I really like them. I really like them.
Thank you. Really 007 is part of the Pod Dojo Network.
Is this where we end up going to a casino?
It is.
It certainly is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is the
and
casino.
And this is where podcast, well, family connections come in.
Star of the show now comes up, yeah.
My word.
Oh, yeah.
And again,
I'll be SEO. Yeah.
Did you think this was from Dying the Day? Yeah, just thinking about it, improved specs. Off the top
I did,
of your head, it's so,
yeah.
It's so dad,
honestly,
isn't it?
Yeah. It's deeply dad, yeah.
It is.
Yeah, because anything that doesn't work for me gets filed as it must be Die Another Day.
Yeah.
So, definitely.
Never go full
improved
dad.
Specs. Yeah, never go full dad. But, you know, the specs, obviously, they work in this scene really just to show that everyone's armed.
Yeah,
it's so babyish. Yeah. It really is.
It looks a bit weird, isn't it? With a gorgeous traditional tuxedo and shades inside. I know people wear them to be cool, but you wouldn't wear them and a dinner jacket combination, would you? Wouldn't really look
a bit
weird.
He does look a bit like, you know, like an 80s sort of synth star who's lost his way.
Turning
up to events.
Yeah.
It's very octopusy, isn't it? It really is.
Oh, yeah. Well, also very View to a Kill.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Focal length on the bottom.
Yeah.
That
but
wasn't
we didn't prove from them.
So. Yeah, those are we really actually.
They are horrendous. I think my mum used to have them specs.
he
pervs at the women quite a bit, actually. He looks them up and down.
So he isn't in love with Electra just yet.
Well, no, he's just
a
man.
He's on the way.
And just with Matt Math, he's got that thing on him where he thinks, just because I'm wearing shades, they can't tell that I'm perving on them.
Yeah.
But it's so blatant that he's just basically looking straight at them.
Maybe
see-through, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
His jaw is slightly lower as well. Like.
Well
but
I'm sure your cousin was flattered.
They don't know who it is.
Sure. It could have been anyone.
Well,
Pierce
definitely.
Is a decent person to be perved upon by. Thank you. We get a calling card, which is quite old school Bond. I think it is, isn't it? The sort of guy he tries to meet Zhukovsky, that he, you know, the go between. There's some sort of lines exchanged, and then he has that crisp sort of mini, not fight,
oh,
but puts him into place.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
I really, really love it the way sort of what is it? Disarming of this guy is so great.
It is.
Very, very cool, very, very Bond. Takes the drink in the same motion.
Oh.
It's all really lovely. And crucially here, you buy Brosnan's athletic ability.
Yes.
By that he could disarm someone like that.
Definitely.
And he's so definitive with his actions and motions that, it's great.
Oh, it's
pure
so
Bond.
Smooth. It's lovely.
One of the beautiful things is when he passes the gun to the barman and the barman gives him his drink.
It's just,
what an exchange.
Swoon.
Yeah.
Just Bond. Yeah.
It's just Bond.
So is he looking at the barman in his underpants?
We don't see that though. It's like in Spy Hard.
Sadly,
when he goes,
sadly not.
He goes to the nuns in Spy Hard and sees everything. But we get that sort of fake Mr. Bullion, and then we get the much more pathetic real Mr. Bullion. Is that meant to be a joke? You know, like, this is the real henchman type guy who's much tinier, and I don't know. I'm reading a lot into this now.
I've no idea. I mean, he's not an amazing character. He's basically if you take away the teeth,
put your money where your mouth is. Yeah.
He's just
a slovenly dressed receptionist, isn't he?
He's gloriously abysmal. I mean, that's the only way to
right. Right.
He's number two on the list of 90s pop culture references and casting.
Yeah.
So we've had John Saru, and now we have Goldie. And Goldie was like with this guy who he was famous, but no one knew why he was famous. And the only thing I could think of it is that if it was done now, it'd be the equivalent of Joey Essex being a bad guy. It's like, we'll just get someone famous from that era. Yeah, famous from that era, but we don't know why.
Clifford Price, MBE.
No.
Yeah, what?
Goldie. That's Goldie for you. Yeah.
That is insane.
The charity work, I think.
Absolutely insane. Oh, well done to... sorry, I never want to...
to do with why he was cast in this film.
No, we didn't.
Just he had gold
teeth. Yeah, we didn't cast him because of his gold teeth. We cast him because of his charity work.
His charity?
He's a philanthropist.
But nice I mean, I thought Goldie was no longer relevant when this film was made. You know, I thought he'd be in the limelight, and now he's on the way out.
We're not talking about Chris Goldie, just in case anyone's immediately getting...
No, we're not.
He's definitely relevant, and he was then. But he's called Bull, relevant, though, isn't he?
Mr. Goldie.
Why is he called Bull?
Bullion.
It's weird. You never hear him called Mr. Bullion. Sorry, you never hear him called Bull in the film, but...
It's in the credits, isn't it?
In the credits, is Bull, yeah. It's
Bull?
So stupid.
Michael Bull, right. No one will get that joke.
Is that what they carry thought on about sorry, the character in the end? You know, afterwards, like, it's just Bull in it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, fair play to him, because I'm guessing later on we're going to go on to the video game. But apart from John Cleese, he's the only other one who actually lent his voice for the video game.
Oh, really?
So you had all these, like, you had Tim Bentinck playing James Bond, but Mr. Bullion was the real deal. I mean, fair play to him for that. Yeah,
I'd love to hear now.
Kurski, we'll see you now.
Yeah. Does that Tim guy, whatever he's called, do an impression of Brosnan? Then is it a decent stab at Brosnan?
Yeah, it was dreadful. It was an
Your father's legacy.
There's a plant. There's a plant here. It's not. It's only a small one. You know.
Oh.
I think Brosnan as Bond says, "After you, I insist." And then it comes back later. It's not a massive one, but
yeah.
It's nice.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And there's a little plant with the caviar, isn't there? He's making some caviar.
Yes,
obviously we go to the factory later. Yeah. Very babyish again. Gorgeous clothes here from Zukofsky. Can we please? The hair, the goatee. Yeah. Stunning again.
Yeah.
It's quite nice to have a return of him. It's very the Brosnan era, isn't it? Because obviously we had Wade... returning Tomorrow Never Dies, and now we get Zukofsky back.
I'm a big fan of returning allies and returning characters is really crisp.
Yeah.
Supporting characters, not normally, you know, more than that. Yeah, I think it's really crisp that he's in this, and Robbie Coltrane's a really good actor. So.
He is, yeah. Just going on to Robbie Coltrane, I know most people will probably remember him now as playing Hagrid in the Harry Potter films. Math, can you remember, I can remember two films he was in when we were growing up, which I'm not sure anyone can remember now. The first one, I don't even know whether we saw it. The underrated Roald Dahl adaptation, Danny, Champion of the World.
Oh, yeah, of course,
I don't know whether anyone has ever seen that.
Yeah, it was Jeremy Irons. Yeah.
And then the other one, of course, was Krull.
Of course, yeah, Krull. Me.
With an exceptional James Horner score.
Yeah, exceptional cast, actually.
And Liam Neeson, is he in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a few people bombing about. But he's not been in a... He, like Sophie Marceau, has not been in a film since 2014.
Damn it!
He was in National Treasure, not the
no, a very different...
The much more serious, you know, basically like a Jimmy Savile type character. It was harrowing.
Yeah.
But
What is that?
He got a nomination.
It was really good.
It's very good acting, yeah. With Julie Walters as well. It's not family viewing. It is pretty harrowing stuff. It's pretty depressing.
It's not very, it's very not the world is not enough, is what it is.
It's definitely not, no.
No, I was just going to say, it's so crisp to see him return, and yeah, it's almost like a silver tux, I've made a note.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Almost? Or is it?
That sort of late 90s the way... footballer suit. So.
yeah. And Bond passes him the parachute thing, and it's just so crisp that the bit that he ripped off happens to be, you know, it has the logo right in the middle.
Oh, underrated, he doesn't actually appear with him, I don't think, at any point in this film. But, of course, he did act with one of the main characters in this film, fellow Scott, in what is probably his best-known TV role. Nearly, Rob.
Cracker. Nearly.
Cracker.
Cracker, sorry, yeah.
Fitz, as it was called in America. Yeah.
Fitz, brilliant.
But, yeah, there was an unbelievable episode with Robert Carlyle as, like, a terrorist, basically. And is it set in Old Trafford at the end, isn't it? And I think that's pretty much what got him the gig with this. He was a really terrifying villain, yeah. And he was bald in that as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Babyish.
But Zukofsky is superb.
Yes.
And it's like the Pierce Brosnan universe of Bond, isn't it? You know, you've got your characters like your Charles Robinson, your Michael Kitchen, as, and then you've got Zukovsky. I love it. Like, it's not like this Daniel Craig here where they bash you over the head with the universe and intertwine it. But
there's so many
adding
now,
a character, yeah. Adding a character here and there. It's just brilliant. I love that. Yeah, I mean, spoiler alert, I was gutted Valentine died. I wish he was back for Dad, me. I'd have been all over that.
I was surprised he wasn't, actually. You know, because his death is quite sort of slow, isn't it?
He has a big hit. He has a big heroic moment.
Oh, he does, definitely. He does. Definitely. But you would definitely be, you know, you could be forgiven for thinking he might return.
Tom, I assume there's a firework. There's a firework. You're not under attack from.
I'm not under attack. This is, you know, it's all day of the episode, but it's sort of firework time.
Davidoff's not stormed your house, Tom, has to lead a.
I don't think I can shut the window anymore. No, yeah. Must be doing it in the back garden next door. Something that's nice, isn't it? We do get fireworks in this film, don't we, at the end? The gorgeous one-liners at the end, but yeah. Hey, hey, hey.
And sour cream.
Whoa.
No, it's not from that bit. It's not from that.
Do you like as well, this is quite Rob, I reckon, how they go from the casino into like a private bar.
Yeah, I always like that. When you get given that like little bit of extra love when you're a patron somewhere, and like just come through this way, sir.
Yeah, they didn't need a wristband.
Hologram.
Stamp. It was just gorgeous. Private table for gambling. Obviously, you'll get that if you're chucking down $1 million. Yeah, that's probably allowed. Yeah. Just great. And again, it's Bond. Bond is about living this
very
life.
Bond.
Being involved in this sort of high life and high stakes. High society, it's all about this. Yeah, it's great.
And then another incredible entrance in the red dress of Elektra.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I mean...
Yeah.
You could say that for every scene that she's in, but yeah. She's looking absolutely stunning
smoking.
Again.
Smoking!
And there's... The musical cue, Tom, you know, with...
Yes, thank you.
I've only myself to blame.
Yeah.
That apparently was supposed to be over the end credits, but was seen as a
brilliant
bit too...
Brilliant knowledge, Roth. I was going to give you some trivia for that, yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's the Elektra's theme, which works so well as a sort of slightly haunting theme. The actual song version by, is it Scott Walker of the Walker Brothers, is a little bit jazzy and silly, perhaps. Just because of his voice is a bit weird. Have you heard it, guys?
Only in the... not that. I mean...
Sheesh.
Under attack here.
There's not like half a ton of plutonium near that.
Weapons-grade plutonium.
Your father's legacy.
Yeah.
My family's legacy.
Crucial.
Crucially, yes.
We get the...
Tom, we have to get the words in between mortar strikes at your home, it seems.
Yeah, I know, it's bad, isn't it, this? Yeah. There's not an awful lot I can do, because it's the thinnest curtain in the whole house.
Well, you've only yourself to blame.
Have I? Yeah, for some reason she sort of behaves a bit weird, doesn't she? And she's just gambling away all this money. Maybe I didn't quite understand that, John.
It comes up later, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Bond's trying to work it out.
Yeah, it's a payoff. She's paying him off £1 million. What was it for? Was it for the submarine?
Yeah.
This is when he's in the caviar, stuck in the caviar, isn't it? Zukovsky.
Yeah, for his.
And they're trying to get the information out of him. Yeah.
Another good thing that isn't complicated is the game that they play. So I can understand
card game.
I can
understand.
Here we go again.
Sorry. 21. I mean, you can edit this. You can edit this bit out, Tom. But I read. I've got nearly all the books because I've never read them before, and I started with Casino Royale. So I've got a bit more appreciation for the film, actually, having read it.
Really?
In some ways, but I still think
Don't tell John.
you wouldn't portray everything in the that's in the book the way that it happens if it's not as dramatic. But anyway, you know,
it's meant to be very faithful. I don't want this debate now. Film adaptations.
Fleming. Oh yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. It's too faithful in some ways. But I really enjoyed it. But Fleming is at pains to explain the rules of whatever it is that I think Baccarat is it?
Baccarat.
Yeah. So you know, and I was still like, pfft. But I think it's really crisp. It's like whoever can get the closest to nine. But I don't think they play that in the actual film version. Which goes against me. Anyway, sorry, I wanted to say that. Like I say, you can edit this bit out, but I'm in relation to, you know, well, there's not enough where it's just one card, high draw. It's
yeah, well,
yeah.
Most the of the audience doesn't understand the games too much. We will get on to Casino Royale, and John, you know, I don't think it's the worst thing in that film, but at all. Spoiler alert. Even though I don't understand it doesn't matter.
The more effective scenes, it's an interesting point about the games in the series across as a whole, where the more effective scenes are the ones where victory is clearly marked. You know, so you know what you need to come out on top. A bit like, you know, double sixes. Fancy that.
Fancy
that.
Yeah.
That looks like the Major's got him.
What I'd say is that on previous times, obviously not a Doctor No, but especially like Majesties and Thunderball, the casino is just used, the game is just used as a setting to actually, for the story. Obviously, like, you know, it's not for, the purpose is not to talk about Casino. The purpose is to show Bond saving Tracy or Bond confronting Largo. And I think with going back to The World Is Not Enough, with this one, if you were just watching this, and you didn't understand the payoff later, you'd look at this going, well, that was a bit of a pointless game. That's a bit of a, you know, it'd be anticlimactic, but it's deliberately anticlimactic because it's a very thinly veiled payoff.
Yeah.
And
is it just a million?
Yeah.
Just loses there and then.
Just loses a million there and then.
Yeah, I was going to say, you get her line there. You know, it's a
yes.
It's a chance for her to get her line in about there's no point in living.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this whole scene is about getting that in. So
oh no!
It really is.
Yeah. The entire set, Josh Cousin, all in there, just for this one bit.
Yeah. No, but that line is obviously a plot point that you know it has to be somewhere. I'm not saying that they built the whole scene around it, but. It's important. It's
it works for the reckless gambler, you know, doesn't it? Well, there's no point in living if you can't feel alive.
And then obviously,
but it's also another good enhancement or you know, PowerPoint really for the series hallmark, which, you know, casinos and gambling is a series hallmark.
It is.
Because it's, you know, it's sexy, it's dangerous, it's, you know, high stakes again, you know. And it's, it's Bond being involved in it all. It's great.
So good, Bond, isn't it? How good is it? This is the world you want to be in.
This is why we love Bond.
It. This is arguably the last time.
Yeah, the last time, This was the last time. Is that the end of Commando? Sorry. So, yeah.
Bennett!
If you're enjoying Really 007, why not follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram? Look us up at Really 007 Pod.
The Devil's Breath. Proper stereotypical villain's entrance, this, isn't it? A bit like in Skyfall. You know, like it sort of emerges talking about something, an allegory. I can't remember either story in this or one of them is about his grandma, is it? I can't remember. Is that Skyfall?
This one is
talking about, I don't know. That's, anyway, I love it.
He talks about the origins of that place, doesn't he? And
yes,
you know, pilgrims came, that were asked to
the Devil's Breath. Yeah. That's brilliant.
I mean, as you go through, when you said about the, you said it was like a standard villain introduction. It is now, but I'm just trying to think through the Bond series of them. And apart from GoldenEye with Trevelyan walking through the monuments in the dark, which is actually quite a similar scene. I can't think of another Bond villain who does walk into that. There might be some after. I think you're right with the silver stuff. But I think actually at the time, again, it's a newer idea.
Yeah, fair point. I
might be wrong there. I'm just thinking off
the top of my head. It's more of a general villain's trope, isn't it? Rather than a Bond film. Which you're right. They're usually known about and you hear about them. M will tell you, oh, we're looking at this Scaramanga guy or whatever, you know. And it tipped off.
As a writer, though, you'd love to have this scene. Gorgeous. I can introduce him here and I can have him saying some menacing lines and second level dialogue.
Rob is grimacing. I'm really worried.
Are you not a fan?
I'm not grimacing at all. I find it like. it's a very obvious villain entrance, like you said, Tom. You know, I think the biggest off-putting point in this is possibly to do with, because I've got no problem with anything. I'll throw it out there. I've got no problem with anything. I had a riot. I had a load of fun with this film. And anything we're talking about now is just because we're talking about, you know, we're talking about it in detail, and there's obviously going to be bits that work for some of us and bits that didn't work. All I can think about during this period is that, right, he can't feel pain, but his skin will obviously still, you know. So when he picks up the rock, I mean, he's burning. He's melting himself. Yeah. So why has he not got a pus-filled hand?
It's a fair point. I think the better point is, from my point of view, is the fact that we don't see this more. Like,
we said it before, didn't we?
I think that's one of my. Again, we'll come on to it, but probably my biggest problem with this film is just I don't think he's quite cast right. I think he's almost cast right, but then I also think the writing in terms of what they do with Renard in the action scenes particularly just doesn't take in enough of his, and we discussed this in the Henchman episode, his superpower of not being able to feel pain, if you know what I mean. He only does that, like, he talks about it a lot, and like, you know, the fact he's already dead and all this. Here, he uses it, like I say, we'll get onto it, so I might be wrong, is when he punches that vase and stuff, but he doesn't really... unnecessary, if you know what I mean. It's not that he uses it in a fight against Bond to get the upper hand. I really like this scene, and I think it sets him up almost too well, because they don't make enough of this later on.
I think we alluded to this, didn't we, in a previous episode, to an extent, that there's nothing wrong with Carlyle's portrayal of Renard, and Renard is a great character. There's nothing, no quibble, no question there. It's just, is he physically imposing enough to take on a 6 foot plus Pierce Brosnan? Pain or not, you know, and I just struggle to buy that throughout this, really. And also, I mean, he's shorter than Sophie Marceau.
Yeah,
you know, when you see that also, and also, you know, like because he becomes entirely subservient to Marceau in the end, and to the point that he generates sympathy, you actually feel for him at the end, and that's also a testament to his performance. His performance is great. It's just he's not big enough. That's it. That's it. Mm. That's literally it. I feel awful saying that. I hate saying that.
It's fair. It's a fair point. One thing I do really like about the introduction is the little heart back to the Spectre years of pretending to... You think Davidoff's going to be shot and instead. And it's very much like Rosa Klebb and... what's his face?
Klebb.
Kronstein. And the one in Thunderball as well. The one in Thunderball in the room. And I like that. You know, it's a nice subtle reference. Exactly. It's that thing again. I love it. It's great.
Yeah. Get another big fat Scottish Russian.
People were bound to ask questions or something.
Parahawks.
I'm unhappy because I eat, and I eat because I'm unhappy.
Dicks him up.
Dirty body.
Dicks him up. Yeah,
in fact, was it Mike Myers who played Arkov?
Yeah. So sad. Oh, dear. Yeah. Fascinating guy. Just going back to Robert Carlyle, he was obviously pretty big at the time. He'd had Full Monty. He won a BAFTA for Best Actor for that. The main film, of course, the other film that he was in, which is The Connection with this, Can you connect it? We've mentioned it a few times. Think who's behind the camera.
Michael Apted?
No. The writers.
Plunkett and McLean. Plunkett and McLean. Yeah.
Yes. Plunkett and McLean.
You know it's Plunkett and McLean. That's each peach of money.
John, surely for you, he's best remembered as the main character in the video Little by Little from Oasis.
He is in that. He is very much in that, yeah.
Something I saw him in recently, which I actually mentioned in our No Time to Die preview, the film, is what a weird scene.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. I won't say actually in case there is, but the film Yesterday.
Well, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, the Beatles one.
The Beatles one.
Yes.
He's uncredited in it.
Yeah.
I won't spoil it.
It's a very odd scene.
I won't spoil it for you, but it's quite strange. I couldn't believe it.
That makes me want to see Yesterday more than any piece of promotion for the film.
So I went on to IMDb just to see what he's been in, and I've just seen what he was credited as in Yesterday, and I was like, wow, okay, wow. I will watch that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very John
way
film,
I'm not
I think,
live John. Googling this.
Yeah.
I consciously made a decision not to watch it because it's got
sorry.
Burke
because of what?
Ed Sheeran in it. I can't stand Ed Sheeran.
Oh, brilliant. But it proves that the Beatles were much more relevant than he ever will be. So don't worry about
exactly.
that.
Yeah. And I just saw like a trailer of him doing Hey Jude or something like that, and I'm like, I'm not touching that film for that.
No,
reason.
Don't worry. It's Richard Curtis and Danny Boyle. Trump's Ed Sheeran, so don't worry.
You know, in the list of films to watch, it's possibly at position 17,000.
It's a long list to catch up on. Precious time.
Yeah. I mean, I hope I might have 50 years more on this planet, and I don't think I'll get to it.
We don't have time. There's no time. Rob, do you have time for one of his famous films, Eragon?
I have time for the I've never seen the movie, but I have seen the Avril Lavigne. Avril Lavigne did a tie-in song
really?
For it. Keep
amazing.
Holding on, which was excellent.
That's the most wrong thing I've ever heard.
John is great. She can pen a tune. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
John knows, man.
She's got melody.
Downloading that.
Yeah, it's a great song. It's
not
a great
17,000th on the my list. My word, I'm going straight.
Well, I mean, the film... No, you know, the film's probably 17... No, actually, it's higher than yesterday. 16,999. So the song is... No, the song's cracking. Go to it. Yeah, what did I say it was called then? Keep Holding On.
Keep Holding On.
Oh.
We'll wait. Yeah,
I've just seen that Robert Carlyle played Hitler as well.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
In a TV sort of... Was it like a TV miniseries or something?
Hitler, the Prize of Evil. Peter O'Toole and Liev Schreiber was in it as well.
Absolutely fascinating, yeah. These things
Believable.
Going on, yeah. Two sort of more well-received films he was in, to give him credit. Angela's Ashes, which seems to have been forgotten a bit, that superb film. Yeah. And The Beach, with Danny Boyle, of course.
Yeah, that film gets loads of grief. I have to say, one night I was staying at the Pickups residence when we were growing up, and I was sleeping in your elder brother's room, and I just couldn't sleep for whatever reason. And I read nearly all the Beach in one night.
Brilliant.
In that bed.
That's such a good fact. Absolutely brilliant. That's
and I actually don't think I've shared that anywhere at any time with anybody.
Best place to share it.
Yeah.
That's very,
very, very good.
Was the book better than the film?
Oh, massively, yeah.
You always are.
Actually, I've got I enjoy the book so much. I've got like a special anniversary edition up there. So you know, I'm pointing. Sorry, listeners, I'm pointing at the bookshelves behind me.
Yeah. So after we've had the Devil's Breath, we have. The bedroom scene. My word. So it got straight into it, so it's like, oh, right, oh, Bond's just giving in there. If you ever, like, there wasn't a scene where, go on, I'll kiss her. A bit like the octopusy sort of embrace, the violent embrace. Oh, yes, John.
Heck.
I kind of take it that he's interpreted that losing £1 million as another sign of a reckless personality, that she's a vulnerable lady, vulnerable girl, and that he's just given in because he has this, like, no, that he wants to save her. That's how I say it anyway.
I know what you mean. Like, if there was a scene here, it would probably be along the lines of, look, you've just shown you're an absolute maniac. The only thing I can really do here is stay with you. If sex is part of that, then I suppose we must have to do it.
it's the most Brosnan unusual kissing and ice capades role you've got.
I think it's quite an interesting, like I said, I don't know, the dialogue and what they're doing.
It's not by the numbers, is it?
It's good. It's fresh because she's not a traditional Bond girl.
No.
Or Bond woman or anything like that. There's something extremely dangerous and damaged about her, which keeps everyone on their toes, both in the mythical world of the film and in the audience.
It's a bit much for the kids, this scene, isn't it? Goodness me.
But they were only warming up for the dying of the day love scene, which...
Well, you've got to anyway.
Orgasms with fruit!
Is that a cocktail, Rob?
Mojito!
A massive orgasm with fruit, please, garçon.
They feast.
Fish till morning. Improved specs.
You can't imagine what kids' reactions this scene, you know, sort of references to her seduction and her body gives her control. What on earth are these kids thinking of?
I mean,
everybody else, like, whoa. Sorry.
I basically was a kid when I watched this in cinema. I was 11 year old. I remember, well, I'm going to be honest, the first thing that I always think of when I went to that was, oh my word, what amazing legs she has. Because they show her legs all over. It's explicit with, like, how much they show her legs. And I remember as an 11-year-old boy vividly thinking, wow. But what's the thing with the ice? That's what I don't... It's what is brilliant. That about?
Was it, a precursor to events in Die Another Day?
Yeah,
no, but there's some ice later.
It came from the ice palace. Yeah.
Later. Who in this first scene, who is it who introduces the ice into proceedings? Is it her or is it him?
Oh, yeah, because later on, it's used with her.
Yeah,
and Renard,
because it's almost like she's harking back to that Bond was able... But Bond was able to give her the physical thing, which Renard can't really. And that, you know, they have that, that thing later. So it's again a bit of a plant for a payoff.
So well
it
done.
Is. It is.
It's so complex.
Yeah.
Complex. Adult themes.
Yes.
And
some
complex
very beautiful.
Complex with the sex.
Yeah.
Yes.
Props again to Michael Apted. I mean, that is Michael Apted who's made that. I mean, we've got to give the guy credit.
Yeah.
It's just...
It's like as daring as you can get for a 12, isn't it? Because the dying of the day is too, it's too much, isn't it? A bit. This is like, I don't know. I suppose ice is the most PG fetish type behaviour, isn't it? You could possibly get that is acceptable, that shows that she's sexually in charge and on the edge.
I'd love it if he, you know, like, what can we use to make this sexually charged? You know, like, and they had a list of ingredients, and one of them was chocolate sauce. Like,
partridge.
Full partridge. Yeah. Got a bit there, mate.
You've got all over the valance, the head, the skirt
for
material.
For pleasure.
Oh, no. Yes, it had to be a bit restrained, this.
You weren't under any illusion that they'd consummated their relationship.
Oh.
You know, and they bonded.
Yeah, and the characters.
Bonded. But in terms of a script thing, it solves that issue. There's a bond there between them. Again, no pun. Yeah, we have to move on. They're now connected in some way.
Yeah, we will move on, don't worry. Otherwise,
I didn't mean we.
It's going to get very hot in here. It's already.
I paused to suppress a massive burp.
We've got a lot to cover.
On course for the first ever triple bill recording.
Longer than No Time to Die times 10 at the moment. The next sequence, though, I'd sort of forgotten about it. It's a bit more detective work. It's good. He gets that credit card type thing. Was he shown that by Q? I can't remember, but he uses that, doesn't he, to break in? Is that more gorgeous Bond theme? And then he finds the dead body. Bit
yeah,
harsh
it executes
shooting
him, really, doesn't it?
Bit cold blood, wasn't it?
Yeah. Again, that comes even more so later in the film.
It's like Doctor No, wasn't it, with Dent? Not quite as horrible as that, but
yeah, fair play. I hadn't ever thought it was harsh. But actually thinking about it, he had no real reason to. He didn't know what he was going doing. He didn't know what he was going doing or anything. And that's the thing with this scene now, is that Bond is going up a garden path and he has no clue where he is going now. Getting on an aeroplane.
Using his wits as a secret agent and everything. I really like it.
Yeah.
Well, there's not enough guys. It's ticking all the boxes.
I do like that notion, though, of, you know, like you're faced with a split-second decision and Bond, because he is James Bond, takes it. And moves forward, moves the momentum, takes the investigation, like, with both hands, and he's making sure he's forging IDs on a plane and all this kind of stuff, so he can get access, and it's great. Yeah, it's great. It's because, I've always found that this sequence hugely exciting, because you just did not know where he was going, but he was going there. There was nothing going to stop him from getting there. Whatever situation he found when he got there.
So at that point, the audience is in the same situation as Bond, aren't they? You know, you're following it through his eyes, which is nice.
That's always good.
And it's all been hidden from you. You don't know what he's going to
I have to say, I love this group of guys. They're all bald. They're all shaven-headed. You know, I don't know why that... and also the trainers, Tom, or Rob, or, you know, whoever's doing the costume and shit.
It's so underrated, this whole sequence. I'd forgotten it. It was
Brosnan doing a Brosnan Russian accent.
Hang on, yes, it's good.
he was buried with work.
Buried with work.
Get to the comedy.
He was buried with work.
It's funny because Brosnan's own accent is so weird that him doing another accent is extremely weird.
We kill Arkov.
Arkov, yeah. We get to the Kazakhstan pipeline from Living Daylights. Sorry, from... The World Is Not Enough. And, you know, it's quite fusing the two, isn't it? The pipeline in Vienna and Bratislava with the final scenes in Afghanistan. No, anyway. This was filmed in Snowdonia in Wales. It was, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
You found
not the exterior of the, you know, the actual pipeline. This guy... Another Scottish Russian accented guy. I've looked him up. He isn't either, I don't think. He's not English either. But we meet her, don't we? We meet Christmas Jones. There's no way we finally got to this amazing point in the film. And does he hint that she's like a lesbian, like pussy galore? I'm immune, that kind of. I've no chance.
Well.
Can we? I mean, like the Christmas
caliber of guy is maybe not what she's.
It's a strange choice.
I don't know any doctor jokes. It's a great line.
That is really
it's silly, but
delivered by Brosnan is very.
Yeah, that's a good. That is a good joke.
Can we just call her Exposition Jones? Because it fits the character so much more. When you need something explaining, she'll be there to sort it out. Tom, what voice
sorry,
was
I,
that?
Sorry, I just said Jennifer thank brought you. Me a beer and I forgot that I was recording.
Well, but how did you end? Like, thank you.
The meek voice, yeah.
Thank you, Carlos.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you, Michael.
That's sad. If anyone
thank
gets
you,
that,
Carlos.
I love you. John, are you just hoping for a glimmer?
A glimmer? What do I think? Well...
Tick time is 6 minutes. 6 minutes. Check.
Denise Richards, let's go for it. I don't dislike her. She's absolutely rubbish. She's absolutely terrible. There's no doubt about it. And yet I would never, ever take her out of this film. And the reason, and the thing I have with it is that there's three characters you're asked to invest in this film. Number one is electrocking. You have to invest in electrocking. And if you invest in her, she's the Bond girl, she's the villain, she's everything.
Yes.
That's where your investment is. You need to invest in James, and we're all on board with James. And you need to invest in M, because M is a big part of the story, especially in the second half. The great thing about Bond, after that, early Bonds, especially Roger Moore era, you don't need to invest in the other characters. The other characters are side characters who you just like because they just have little quirky bits. You don't need the big backstory. One of the big problems with the Daniel Craig era is that they are basically asking you to invest serious backstory knowledge into every single character. You don't need to do that. And actually, one of the reasons why I really love The World Is Not Enough is because you've got this glorious mishmash of three incredibly strong performances in M, Electra, and Bond, where I'm emotionally invested. And the rest are entertaining as chuff. Like, and you've got... and you've got Robbie Coltrane, who is brilliant. And brilliantly entertaining. But then you've got these mismatched characters who are bad, but they are still just as entertaining. And Christmas Jones is one of them. And I think that I'm trying to... If I compare her to, say, Stacey Sutton, I quite like Stacey Sutton, don't get me wrong. But she, when you think of who are the worst rated in general, yeah, they're usually the ones that you kind of talk about. You have to invest massively in Stacey Sutton because the whole story's based around her, basically, about that. Here, you don't. She's just here for the ride, and she does the exposition. But she's pretty useless throughout the film. She's a passenger. And I actually just find real entertainment in just listening to her deliver horrendous line after horrendous line. I find it brilliant. I actually have zero problem with her whatsoever. I go with the ride because I'm fully invested in the three main characters.
It's good to hear that, John. And I think that... Yeah. You know, yeah, I don't know. It's made me think slightly differently, maybe than I was thinking. I don't think
very much so. Very much.
There's sort of an element of the Tomb Raider about the outfit. Her costume throughout isn't great, but I don't know if that's too because Electra's are obviously all stunning, so it's sort of a bit of a opposite of that. I don't think she's the greatest character in the world. Like you say, though, John, you're not really asked to invest in her particularly. I think a lot of it is, we need a Bond by the end because Electra's become a villain. We still need a Bond girl. Whereas when they wrote Skyfall, which has a lot of, you know, as we've discussed, a lot of elements of this film in it, they clearly decided, well, M is a big enough, she's almost the Bond girl in it. There's a female character in it that Bond invests in emotionally. We don't need to then add a sort of, you know, more damsel in distress or whatever. So they might have been harking back to this.
Yeah.
In that, you know, she's a secondary character who doesn't, you know, like you say, you don't invest an awful lot in. They don't have great, I don't think they have amazing chemistry. The dialogue isn't great. I don't think you really believe... You believe that him and Electra could, you know, would get together. I don't think you really believe this. But what I find interesting is... And you might have to think about this. And have any American Bond girls ever really hit the mark with audiences and critics? And I think... You know, because they're quite common. So that, you know, after this, there's Halle Berry... before it, you know, you had Terry Hatcher for a bit, and you know, she wasn't the Bond girl, as it were, but she was, you know, Stacey Sutton, Tiffany Case, but
Lewis Charles,
Pam Bouvier,
yeah, no, that's a good
Pam's
one.
The only one, you're right though, Matt.
But
I think it's because, like, especially with that one, that you don't necessarily think of Pam as American.
No, not particularly. But I think a lot of the time, they want to appeal to an American audience, so they want to try and get an American character and an American actor in there. But they don't particularly want an American villain, because I'm not sure American audiences always like an American villain. Mm-hmm. Or maybe this is historically. I mean, I'm just speculating here. So that's why quite often it's yeah, it's got
exceptions
more mysterious. So anyway, I think just all those things were things that I was thinking about when seeing Christmas Jones. The name is a bit babyish, and I know that Bond names are a bit babyish, but it's maybe a bit
Jones too, is the most babyish bit.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's the end of part 3, but join us for part 4, where we learn of Elektra's deception and take a visit to Valentin Zukovsky's caviar factory.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.